Welcome to the Ralph Moore Podcast. Gain the leadership advantage as Ralph pulls wisdom from his bag of over 50 years' experience in planting and leading multiplying churches. Our goal is to help you live as a leader you'd want to follow. You'll learn about making disciples and planting churches, but beyond that, you'll gain practical wisdom about subjects like how to manage your team, handling difficult people, pulling a congregation off a growth plateau, and even money management.
Hi, welcome to the podcast. Today, I get to interview a partner in crime, Chesley Lunde, and he is a ministry development coordinator for New Breed Ministries. I've put all my stuff on their website. We're partnering with Peyton Jones and having a lot of fun doing it. Chesley is a guy that got me going on YouTube, and I'm forever resenting him over that, I think.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you tell me every time we hang out.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me, Ralph. It's always an honor to talk to you. I mean, you're amazing. So, I consider you a friend and a mentor, and used to be a mentor from afar, and over the last couple of years, just becoming, getting to know you has been phenomenal.
Well, it's been fun for me, and I'm considering you a mentor. I'm learning an awful lot from you. And so we're going to talk about that a little bit today. I always like to start this out by a little bit of just personal history and, how you keep faith, where you've been, how you got where you are right now, and then we'll just go and talk from there.
Yeah, totally. I was born on a Sunday. I was in church on a Friday. And I was dedicated that Friday. And the reason why is because my grandparents were missionaries to El Salvador. They came in for a missions conference. And you might know the name Lester Summerall. He was pastor. He was the main speaker at my dedication service. Not because of me, just because it was a mission conference and everybody could actually get there. So, which is pretty interesting. So did that. My dad was in ministry. Pretty early on, they had me when he was going to Bible school. My dad started in children's ministry, and actually probably still to this day was the best children's minister I've ever seen. And then he ended up planting a church before they called it church planting. They called it church pioneering. And back then, when you did church pioneering, they would bless you, knight you, and push you out the door saying, no money and no people, please plant 2 hours away,
That's my experience. We didn't find a church. We pioneered a church. There was an empty building we inherited, which was good, but no money, no people, no nothing. And and it was a good experience. God blessed it, and I'm thrilled to be part of what he built around it.
Yeah, so I cut my teeth. I was 11 years old when my dad did that. And I was the oldest of five kids, and so did that. Went in, my dad helped a couple other pioneering churches in Colorado, then in Oklahoma again. I was born in Oklahoma, so we came back the next time, and then he helped work on revitalizing a ministry in Arkansas my senior year of high school. I went to five different high schools in four different states, and my senior year of high school, I was there, ended up deciding to start this. I was with the Student Christian Association and decided I was going to do a youth rally in a town of 12,000-13,000 people, and so I did that. And 400 kids showed up. So I knew, I understood the relational dynamics enough back then that you grab the most popular people and you have them do certain things that you couldn't do yourself, and you'll get way further along than you anticipate. So I grabbed, the most popular youth pastors in the city, the most popular kids to be the MC. And my friend, who was the only band in that city that had ever gotten a record deal, she just so happened to be a friend of mine. So I asked them to do worship. These friends that were in the band, actually, my dad was the children's pastor of when they were growing up. So it made it pretty easy. So I did that. That was my senior year of high school. My summer that year was composed of deciding to start a youth church, which just so happened to become like the fourth largest church in that town within 6 weeks. And the only two adults in the room were my mom and my dad, and they did nothing. So it was all teenagers all the time, to a point that I ended up getting yelled at by a bunch of older pastors, because that absolutely wasn't supposed to happen. And then the skating rink we were meeting in ended up getting bought out and made into offices. So we had to dismantle because we had no money. You know, it was a bunch of teenagers. But no, we had 90 kids within 6 weeks. Wow. Yeah, that's, and we were doing everything. And then so nobody told me I couldn't do those things. I just did. Like, I was dumb enough, naive enough to think that, oh, you know, maybe we could pull this off. You know, until I did it, and then a bunch of people came out of the woodwork and told me it was not biblical. I shouldn't do that, and you'd be under authority. How dare you do that? Like, you know, all the negative Nancys that, unfortunately, at 18 years old, I listened to. Right. So,
which I want to interrupt you for a second, because this is where we're going to go with this. I want to talk a lot about what's going on in social media,
and
people kind of doing online church and all of that, and they're all meeting negative Nancy. And negative Norman, it's crazy. I was in a seminar, just a little parenthesis here, with you, and you're talking about these huge numbers of people that are involved in TikTok church, and somebody in the room goes, that's not enough. They need to be going to church and they need to be in a building and all that. But the answer that somebody gave was, well, they're not going to your church. And that's the problem. God's trying to do something special right now. Yeah. And I'm talking to people who are going, no, it's not a real move of God. It's not going to go anywhere. Maybe they're not even really saved. They just bought a Bible. But anyway, let's get back to your story, and then we'll get into the fun stuff.
They're not saved, but they bought a Bible. Nobody buys a Bible unless they're seeking first for Jesus. That's, these funny things. Really gives me a little tickle. I don't know. So it's really funny. Ended up joining the military and Bible school all at the same time. That was fun. So I joined the Air National Guard thinking, oh, it'll pay for school. Two things I said I would never do, which was go to college or go to the military. I did the same thing within 6 weeks of each other. I got activated. Had a lot of church hurt and started moving away from Jesus for a short amount of time. And God brought me back. And when he did, I felt, you know, a call to ministry. I thought it was church planting. Church planting was cool. At its height, I was going to Mars Hill at the time in Seattle, Washington, because it was really popular then. And so I just felt a call. Married my wife within 8 weeks. I had a military injury. They sent me home, met a cute girl, married her, and went back. And the Holy Spirit told me, your time in the military is done. This is at 4 years of a 6-year contract. I'm like, there is no way. It's got to be the pizza I was eating. So I remember, I'm like, Lord, if that is you, I'm not telling anybody. You're going to have to do it. So that injury was a reconstructive ankle surgery. And when we got back, I was told we got a new commanding officer and he'd like to have a conversation with me. So he brought me in the office. He said, we've been remissioned, which means you have to go to another tech school. So this would have been my third job change in the military. And he's like, I have a color deficiency, red and green color deficiency. So there's only a certain amount of jobs that I can have in the military. And every one of them was about a year and a half long. And so they wanted to make sure that I was going to reenlist. And I told them I was not. And so they're like, well, we don't want to spend the money on educating you. So you can have an early release, an honorable discharge. So my time in the military was done. Yeah. So came back home. Started a construction business, painting contracting. That's what my dad had taught me. He was a Bible church planter. And so did that. I was pretty darn successful in the first year, but still was doing church ministry, and I became a church planting resident with the North American Mission Board, where this dude named Peyton Jones was working on church planting training with a guy named Mac Lake, and I went through that whole training. And wow. So I met Peyton briefly through that, and I would ask him questions. And then I ended up in Omaha, Nebraska in 2015, thinking we're going to plant in Omaha. So we went through a vision tour. The church planting catalyst for the denomination had asked me to consider pastoring a dying church three different times. Every time he called, I told him, no, I don't do that. I don't have the wiring for that. And he's like, okay, well, we're there on the vision tour. He's driving us around, and I hear the Holy Spirit tell us we're supposed to let him show us the church. And it was a 4,000 square foot building, two levels, 2,000 on one, the other one built like a house, because they were a really small church that had built this church, and they wanted to be able to resell it as a house if the church died. And when we walked into the building, the flooring was caving in, and it was Smurf blue carpet. And in the downstairs, like, they had a leak in the basement. They had the kids down in the basement. This is crazy. They leak in the basement. So they shut the door, and there's mold all growing and mildew growing. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. But as soon as we walked in, Ralph, my wife and I both knew God was calling us to pastor that church. So I got voted in 26-1. I grew it down to 19 and cried and asked God why he would bring me here to kill this thing. And so I ended up going to get church planting training again, because I obviously had no clue what to do trying to turn around a dying church that had a ton of debt on top of that. And over the next year and a half with my coach, actually grew it to over 100 before the denomination decided to sell the building after we fixed it up and all that fun jazz. So at that point, we felt like it was time to call it a day. We merged it with the congregation that had planted it 30 years beforehand. And I ended up becoming a youth and young adult pastor in Phoenix, Arizona. But 2015, 2016, as I was there, I was doing urban inner city ministry in Section 8 housing, and I had a lot of young professionals that would come through our house and help us, or come through our apartment complex, help us. And I was doing, a rough neighborhood, right? Drug deals. Somebody tripped out on LSD 2 a.m. in the morning. Like, it was just, it was crazy. But these young professionals would come over, and I would try to invite them to church, and they wouldn't do it. And then people that would start start loving us in the property, they just wouldn't come to the building. So I'm sitting with a bunch of pastors. I'm the youngest at 20 by 25 years at this point in this denomination. And they're talking about, how do we get millennials to church? And they talk for 45 minutes about how to get millennials to church. And they finally asked me what I thought. I said, well, I keep asking myself this question. What if the church didn't have a building? And they laughed at me like, you cute millennial, and went back to talking about how to get millennials back in the church. Apparently my statement wasn't good enough. Ended up in Phoenix, Arizona, playing around with digital technology and thinking through like social media and digital community. And those are two very different things. Like, I know people think they're the same. They are not the same. Mm-hmm. And I am like, okay, there's some things here. I was experimenting with Gen Z and realizing they could conversate with me easier through DMs in a private community than they could having a conversation. Literally, they're DMing me while they're in my own house. And I'm like, okay, well, this is a problem. We're not doing church right. If this is what it's going to be like, we've got to rethink some things. And so I beta tested a private community specifically for student ministry, did a student ministry network, had like five churches inundated, their youth groups, started doing leadership development, launched this thing 3 weeks before COVID. I could not have timed it any better. And it was luck. It was the providence of God. It was not on me, you know. So all this happens, COVID happens. It just started, like, we're getting kids from other states coming in. We knew how to build community online just because I had been playing around with it for a long time. I'm like, church planting in digital spaces will work. And I never saw it as competing with physical space just because, you know, Gen Z doesn't either. Like, there's things we do digitally and things we do physically. But my best friend, who was my church planting coach when I was in Omaha, Nebraska, we had never lived in the same place. I never knew him outside of digital technology. Like, what you and I are doing right now is digital. The reality is, Ralph, you and I have a really good relationship. I get to see you physically at times. I wish more, but this works. And then there's this thing of synchronous and asynchronous. Those are two very different things. And so I knew that you put the two together, and sometimes it's physical, sometimes it's digital, sometimes it's synchronous, sometimes it's asynchronous, and beautiful things happen. Like, and now the data that's coming out of, like, Michigan State University and Silicon Valley is backing up all this stuff, saying, like, no, there's actually real, actually more genuine relationships that are happening in digital community spaces than sometimes in physical, and many times in physical spaces, because there's more safety there and some more more care and intentionality inside of the relationship. This is why gaming platforms have deep communities, is because they have something to do alongside of the community, side by side, even though it's digital, right? It's but it fosters real relationship. Now, I stay on the influencer model, which is an interesting space. I think it's very dangerous. I think it's also, it's like a loaded gun. In the right hands, it can be absolutely useful and a wonderful tool. You know, it's great for hunting. It's, you know, there's some things in it that are really helpful. In the wrong hands, it can be really damaging and really evil. In the uneducated hands, the clumsy hands, you can have dangerous accidents. That's digital technology and influencer with social media to me. But I love this space. I see God moving in it. We just had a conference this 2 weeks ago where three of the biggest influencers in the country came into our town, and 1,300 kids showed up. And don't tell me that God isn't moving. I'm watching it. I'm watching it happen in real time. And so the digital space is alive. I love it. I think the church needs to understand that it doesn't compete with physical spaces. And you're going to see Gen Z and Alpha, they're going to want physical space more. I think physical relational connection is going to be more and more important with AI coming down the pipeline. But they don't have the skills that you have from a non-digital era. And so we were formed in a digital space where the way we see things and process information is so totally different. I'm one of the few that can bridge the gap. And so I feel like that's what I get to do now. And so I get to play in that space. And at the end of the day, it's community. It's exactly what the church should be good at doing. But the reality is, half the time, not more than half the time, we're working on a Sunday morning event that actually keeps us away from building and designing a community structure where many people get to flourish. And so now that's what I'm trying to help churches. I think Sunday morning is wonderful. I love it. I still go to a Sunday morning, Sunday-centric church, and we're unapologetic about Sundays. However, we know that's still not enough. And so we're working on, what does it look like to disciple people, develop them and their ongoing relationship with Jesus, and then disciple make? How do you convert them, develop them, train them, send them back out? And I think doing that, like, Ralph, you showed the blueprint for us. That's about as short as I can get of that, you know, 39-year story.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe and check his blog at ralphmoore.net.